Welcome to Alabama AgCast, a weekly conversation about news and issues affecting Alabama farmers and forest landowners. Alabama AgCast is produced by the Alabama Farmers Federation.
Hello and welcome to this week's Alabama AgCast. I'm your host, Mike Moody. In the AgCast studio today, we've got Derek Farnsworth. Derek is an associate professor with the University of Florida Food and Resource Economics and also does work with Extension in Florida. Today, Derek is in Montgomery at the Alabama Extension Ag Outlook Conference. Derek, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be here.
So glad to have you here in our state and talking about the ag economics and also the outlook for ag coming up in the future. And today, Derek was here in Montgomery talking about, in particular, farm labor and dealing with things like H-2A. So we thought we'd get him in the studio while he's here and talk about some of the things that he was bringing to the meeting. So just as a general overview, I think many of our listeners are Alabama producers, and they'll know what H-2A is. But for those that might not, what is the H-2A program?
The H-2A program is basically a temporary visa for seasonal workers to come in and work, you know, for a season in the U.S. and then go back home to their home country, which is typically Mexico. About 93% of H-2A workers come here from Mexico.
And the what I thought was interesting in your presentation is that how much participation goes on in the country. We typically think, you know, Southeast, there's a lot of heavy agriculture, a lot of need for physical labor, for hand labor to take care of some harvesting. But it's really all over the country. If you can give us a brief history of the H-2A program, how did it come into being?
In 1986, the H-2A program was formed. And that's the more recent incarnation of it. But we've actually seen similar temporary visa programs for Mexican workers and workers from other countries in prior parts of our U.S. history, particularly a little bit into World War I and World War II through the Korean War. We saw what were called the Bracero programs, which were sort of similar temporary ag worker programs. In the 90s and early 2000s, H-2A wasn't that big in the U.S., and recently in the last decade, I would say it's grown tremendously.
Well, with that, also the increase has brought the increase of price of wages for those, and those seem to be increases, but they vary tremendously, it seems like, from state to state. What are some reasoning behind some of that?
Well, there's a specific calculation, and you can look it up based on local prevailing farm wages on how that adverse effect wage rate is specifically calculated. Basically, though, ag wages have been going up around the country, which has been driving the adverse effect wage rate higher as well. The idea behind the adverse effect wage rate, which is the minimum hourly wage paid to H-2A workers, is that they're not supposed to compete with or take jobs from domestic workers, right? There still is a preference for hiring domestic workers, and these H-2A workers are only supposed to fulfill a shortage. So it's not so much that they're getting a pay bump, it's that ag workers are becoming more expensive in general, and we want to make sure that these H-2A workers, and the U.S. federal government that administers this program, Department of Labor and all these other agencies, want to make sure that this program doesn't undercut the wages of domestic farm workers.
Along with that, you were talking about in your talk some of the migration patterns and average ages, and all these are varying over time, but they seem to be the average age seems to be rising quicker of recent time, and also the migration patterns, those coming in from different countries. And talk to us a little bit about how some of those trends might be affecting participation of, or might be affecting the H-2A program itself.
Well, simply put, there's fewer newcomers to farm labor in recent years than ever in our recent history. Some people are still working in agriculture and aging in these more entry-level positions. And just in general, even managers, farm managers are getting older too. There's not as many newcomers. So as a result, we've sort of gone to it's not the perfect way of saying it, but importing temporary ag workers on a seasonal basis through this program.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be we had more workers like in the early 2000s who were undocumented and worked in U.S. agriculture, but now there's been a downward shift in newcomers in that form of hiring, and there's been more of a transition to hiring through like the H-2A program, for example.
It's never a dull day on the farm, especially when your day starts before the sun comes up. We're Alabama Ag Credit, and while some don't get it, we do. As the local experts in rural real estate financing, we've helped farmers finance everything from homes and land to tractors and crops. Because sometimes your natural resources need financial resources.
Another interesting fact that you touched on was the participation of Alabama producers, and a question led to this also of what can we do to encourage folks to take advantage of it. But the trend in Alabama, there was a percentage of, I think, 11% in 2021 of the ag workforce. I don't want to misquote some of those some of the percentages, but that percentage is still increasing in every state, really, in that participation. But those that don't feel like it's worth them, what if you have a farm operation? What are some of the things that you can look at and say, hey, this is a good opportunity for me to take advantage of this H-2A program?
Well, the basic idea behind H-2A is that if you have an ag labor shortage and you need seasonal workers, it doesn't always work that well if it's not a seasonal position. But if you need seasonal ag labor to fill a shortage, that's when you would traditionally look at the H-2A program. Now, you have to dot all your I's and cross all your T's to participate in the program. It can be a little bit of an effort to get on board and learn how to use it. Typically, you'll find someone to provide some legal representation to help you, at least as you get started. And it tends to be less costly for bigger farming operations to move to H-2A. But the core idea of H-2A is it's supposed to be resolving this farm labor shortage by allowing you to, like I said, maybe not the best way of quoting it, but temporarily import these foreign workers on legal visas for a seasonal job. And just to clarify those numbers really quickly, I believe I was referencing an article in my presentation, and we can double check these later, but I think it was approximately 11% of the U.S. farm workforce in 2021 was H-2A. And 17% of the crop workforce. Now, that's when we had about 300,000 H-2A positions certified in 2021. In 2022, that had grown to approximately 370,000 H-2A positions certified, and that's expected to continue growing into the future as well. And maybe we could find the 2023 numbers and update that too.
The program itself, looking back at that a little bit, there are stipulations to have a preference for U.S. workers. And how does all that work in the calculations?
The idea here, once again, is you don't want an H-2A worker. I'm using colloquialisms too much, right? But you, the government, generally, we don't want H-2A workers replacing domestic workers' jobs, right? So you have to demonstrate that there's a shortage of workers on your operation in order to hire H-2A workers. This, typically there's a whole process, and I'm not going to represent it perfectly off the top of my head, but you typically have to advertise for the position, show that no one's filled it. And then once you've documented a shortage for those workers, you can request workers through the program to fill that shortage. And these workers, you pay for their housing, you pay for their travel. There's some other program costs like bonding. And then, of course, there's the minimum adverse effect wage rate for these H-2A workers. But the key thing is that these workers are intended to fulfill a shortage. They're not supposed to directly compete with domestic workers.
The requirements are somewhat specific on how much you have to provide housing and living conditions per X number of H-2A workers.
Yeah, it's pretty tightly regulated, the housing conditions and other aspects of the program, which is why often participants in the programs will call it somewhat bureaucratic, like declaring the area of intended employment for them and scheduling the travel. and the bonding process and making sure the housing is up to code for the workers. And there's been some recent rule clarifications on exactly what the housing is supposed to look like in recent years from the Department of Labor. So it's a pretty closely managed program with some, you know, very clear rules on how to do this. And it can be quite costly to be out of compliance as well. Now, there's anecdotal stories of rules being broken, and you can probably look up news stories about that and learn more about examples when not everything's followed exactly as it should be. But generally, I think this program is pretty well administered, and there are clear and enforced rules on housing.
So as we're kind of wrapping up, Alabama does not participate as much, and maybe it's because of the type of agriculture we do, but what are some in the Southeast, or what are some trends that you're seeing that are ways that we can help encourage work producers to seek out that kind of help?
Well, just to begin with, H-2A workers are primarily doing piece rate work in fruit and vegetable industries. Now, they do work in other areas too to some extent, but that's that type of seasonal, tough work to fill domestically, a job where we would look for a temporary ag worker to come in. Now, Alabama's been a little bit slower on the uptake. It's been more recent of the uptake has been more significant recently, but there probably the biggest reason for that is there's not as much fruit and vegetable production here as in some of the other states that have taken it up more quickly. So Florida and Georgia, North Carolina and the Southeast are big H-2A employers. You could argue that some of that is like fruit and veg in Florida. We have a lot of H-2A workers in Florida citrus. I mean, probably around 90%+ of Florida citrus is harvested by H-2A workers these days. Some of that in Georgia, tobacco in North Carolina, which is outside the fruit and vegetable, but there's a big association-based hiring pattern there. And these are also states with lower hourly minimum wages for H-2A workers. That adverse effect wage rate is actually different by state and a little bit lower in the Southeast. But if you were specifically asking why Alabama's been a little bit slower on the uptake, it's probably because it's not as big of a fruit and vegetable area traditionally. But we have seen a significant growth in H-2A program utilization in Alabama in recent years. It was almost non-existent in the state in 2017. Less than 100 H-2A workers were hired just, 6 years ago, basically. And recently, I think in 2022, we were talking about this today, 2,000 or 3,000 workers were H-2A workers in Alabama, depending on how you count those numbers, whether the contractor or the employer was specifically located in Alabama. And so anyway, I'm not going to give you the exact number depending on how it's calculated, but huge program growth, huge program utilization growth in Alabama in the last, let's say, 6 years.
We don't want to get into the politics of it necessarily because that's not your forte. But did I understand you to say in your talk that there are some new proposed rules from the federal government that they're looking at?
Yes. So if you want to look at this stuff, the Department of Labor, all you would have to do is maybe Google like Department of Labor H-2A rule. And you could see the rule passed last year, basically updating some things about housing and how that's clarified. These are minor things, right? Like details about how you interact with the program. But this year, there's a proposed rule. I believe it was proposed in October. And then, you know, once again, maybe don't quote me exactly on these dates, but I think there's like a 60-day comment period, right. And then they'll try to finalize it based on any comments received. I believe we're going through that process right now, or we're nearing the end of it.
Derek, before we go, is there anything else you'd like to mention to our listeners out there?
The H-2A program seems to be picking up a lot. We're seeing utilization set records every year, and I think more and more growers are becoming interested in employing seasonal labor through the program. And I would just caution folks to be careful about how you engage with the program. It is a somewhat bureaucratic program with clear rules and regulations on things like housing and travel and everything that goes into getting a worker, usually from Mexico, but sometimes from elsewhere, to the U.S. and taking care of them here and then sending them back. So it does occur sometimes where someone's new to managing the regulations of the program, and they can struggle to really do everything properly. Like an example, this would be the job duties of the workers. You have to be very explicit about everything that worker does while they're on your operation. And if somebody comes by and sees the worker not doing a task that wasn't part of their job order, that can lead to problems. You know, there's other examples of this too, like maybe you didn't declare a specific area of employment for them, geographically, and your crop is, you know, you're done harvesting a little early, or maybe it's a little late and you want to make sure they're used during that time. And if you didn't declare that area of intended employment, once again, you can get in trouble. Or maybe your housing's not perfectly up to code. So if you are new to the program and it can sound really interesting at times, be very careful, dot all your I's, cross all your T's, maybe look for some legal representation or some sort of a facilitator to help you manage the program. Associations are often helpful in this regard too. There's extension materials out there and different outreach effort. I know Dr. Adam Rabinowitz here at Auburn has been helpful providing some of this extension programming. So if you're new to it, especially, learn as much as you can, seek help, seek education, and try to limit your liability by covering all your bases.
Very good. Well, Derek, thank you for taking your time to give us some more information about H2A.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us for Alabama AgCast. For more information about today's conversation, check out the show notes or visit alphafarmers.org/AgCast. Be sure to follow Alabama Farmers Federation on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Tune in next week for another timely conversation from Alabama AgCast.